This morning, America's First News starts right after this.
Do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. Fortunately, GEICO makes it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. It's a good thing, too, because having a home is hard work. Go to GEICO.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. GEICO.com. Easy.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This morning, with your host, Gordon Deal.
The YOLO economy. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koshenka, on this Monday, Memorial Day, May 31st. Glad you could be with us. Here's what we have for you this hour.
Some millennials had an awakening during the pandemic. Scores are dropping their stable jobs to start an adventure. We'll have examples.
Ever wonder how that old water tower still turns out clean water? Maybe it doesn't. Hear how pathogens go unnoticed.
How military handlers are reunited with their canine units after the dogs retire.
And tips for teenagers looking for jobs this summer.
Not only are all the tried and true opportunities still available to them, technology has made their opportunities, you know, skyrocket. So it's actually, in many cases, much better than it's ever been.
Carl Gould at Seven Stage Advisors on the job climate for teens the next 3 months. Well, burned out and flush with savings, some workers are quitting stable jobs in search of post-pandemic adventure. So says Kevin Roos, technology columnist at the New York Times. Kevin, what are we seeing?
So we're at a really strange moment in the economy right now. We're seeing a lot of people who are obviously still struggling. They've lost jobs. They're sort of grieving over the pandemic. But there's this other group of people that I started hearing about a few months ago who were sort of in stable, cushy jobs and who were quitting them to go pursue passion projects or, you know, go back to school or start a business. They were taking more risks. And the sort of justification they gave was that their priorities had shifted during the pandemic. They had realized, you know, basically, you only live once. And so I started calling this the YOLO economy. Mm. And I started hearing from more and more people who were making these kind of abrupt career changes and kind of risking it all after a year of, you know, grief and anxiety.
Give an example. Who did something that really raised your eyebrows?
So I talked to one guy who's he's in his late 20s and he works at a major clothing retailer. And he recently decided, you know, his company was saying they had to go back to the office before June 1st. And he said, you know what? Then June 1st is my last day. I'm going to quit before then because I'm never going back to an office. So he made this Excel spreadsheet with all these options. He might take a coding class or move to the Caribbean or join a political campaign. And his basic thought was, you know, I'm not going back to what my life was like before the pandemic.
Wow.
And he sort of thought of this as a time to kind of reset his life.
Jeez. All right. So if folks who do this, they have the savings to, say, pay the bills in the meantime while something's developing? How does that work?
Yeah. So a lot of them have savings. They've saved money over the past year. And these are, you know, mostly people who are working in sort of higher paid industries. Maybe they have a nest egg. The stock market's been doing really well. So, you know, absolutely, these are people with the privilege of kind of looking at their lives and saying, what would I like to do? What would make me more fulfilled? But we're actually seeing this kind of attitude in more places than just the kind of upper class. Job openings are at an all-time high right now in a lot of industries. Many restaurants and trucking companies are having trouble filling open positions because people are sort of being choosier. They're able to do so because they have stimulus checks or enhanced unemployment benefits, and so they don't have to take the first thing that comes along.
Wow. We're speaking with Kevin Roos, New York Times tech columnist. His column is called The Shift. This one is called Welcome to the YOLO Economy. Employers, you said too, are kind of fearful of this exodus. What are they doing or saying?
Yeah, absolutely. They are super worried about turnover. They're seeing, this wave of people quitting on the horizon. And so they're trying really hard to keep people happy. Some firms are giving people bonuses or extra days off. One Wall Street bank I wrote about just gave its employees all expenses paid vacations. So employers are really starting to worry not just about burnout, but about people actually quitting.
Wow. I was surprised, too, because you said it's, I think it was in the subheadline of your column that said it's in some cases millennials. I thought you're burned out already. You're young.
Exactly. Well, I think a lot of millennials sort of were taught that, you know, if they just went to the right school and got the right job and worked really hard, they would sort of move up and they'd be able to, you know, pay off their loans and enjoy their lives. And I think a lot of them are saying, you know what, I don't want to wait till I'm 45 or 50 to be able to enjoy my life. Yeah. I want to be able to do it now.
Wow. Who else did you talk to that kind of made one of those radical shifts in a career?
Well, I talked to a woman named Olivia Messer, who's a used to be a reporter for the Daily Beast. And her story was not one of sort of going in search of adventure. She was really traumatized and burned out. She'd been covering the pandemic as a reporter. And so she just decided at one point, like, she didn't have, she was drained. She was out of gas and she needed to kind of recoup and recharge. And so she moved down to Florida. She's been doing, you know, painting and kayaking. And it kind of gave her a new lease on life. And so I think there are many reasons that people are deciding to kind of hit the eject button on their careers, ranging from sort of boredom to burnout and grief. But it's really happening all over the place right now, and it's got employers really scared.
Thanks, Kevin. Kevin Roos, technology columnist at the New York Times. Coming up next, contaminated water towers. Have you ever bought something online only to find out right afterwards you could have saved money? Sometimes you don't know. You just see that little promo code field that makes you wonder, is this the best deal I can get? Well, now you'll know, thanks to the new shopping tool called Honey. You've heard me talk about Honey before. Just start by shopping on one of your favorite sites. When you're ready to check out, the Honey button drops down. All you have to do is click Apply Coupons. If there's a working coupon, Honey finds it and your price drops. It's that easy. Honey has found coupons that save their 17 million members over $2 billion. I know because I'm one of them. If you don't already have Honey, you could be straight up missing out on free savings. It's literally free and installs in a few seconds. And by getting it, you'll be doing yourself a solid and supporting this podcast. I'd never recommend something I don't use. Get Honey for free at joinhoney.com/Gordon. That's joinhoney.com/Gordon. Thanks for spending part of your Memorial Day with us. Water storage tanks, especially those sitting atop towers emblazoned with logos, serve as the most visible symbol of something most of us take for granted. Clean water for drinking, cooking, and bathing. But an opening in them as small as a few millimeters could prove the difference between drinking a glass of clean water and one contaminated by insects or animal feces that can cause diarrhea, respiratory infections, or worse. It's an exclusive story by Kyle Bagenstos, investigative reporter at USA Today. Kyle, what have you uncovered?
Yeah, so I think this is mostly a story of a kind of a weak spot in the safety of our nation's drinking water, and that's water towers and tanks. I think most people know things like lead pipes are bad and chemicals in your water is bad, but I'm guessing when most people drive by their local water tower, they don't really think twice about it. And what we found is that they're actually a real vulnerability because they are so overlooked. Water is often just sitting in those storage tanks or towers before it goes out in the distribution system and reaches homes. And if that tower tank has an opening, even a tiny one, animals or bird droppings or whatever can get inside. And with the water, especially if it's not circulating well in there, pathogens can start to proliferate. And the next thing you know, it can go out into drinking water. So I think that's the general gist, is that these towers are often very overlooked, kind of forgotten about by both utilities in some cases and certainly regulators, and hazards can form in that environment.
Well, I guess results at times can be fatal, right?
Yeah, so this was an interesting thing to me. I spoke with Kelly Reynolds, who was a professor of environmental health at University of Arizona, and she's part of this group of scientists who study how often people get sick from drinking water. And it's hard to put your finger on, but the estimates range from 4 to 32 million people getting sick from drinking water every year, about 1,000 dying. Now, how much of that is from something that started in a water tower versus, you know, in the source water versus something later down with a leaky pipe or something is hard to figure out, but there is as she described it, an endemic level of illness that we just live with people getting sick from drinking water in this country, and water towers, you know, are just a very vulnerable spot.
All right, and what stood out to me as you uncovered here is that the cleaning of these water towers is simply not consistent or documented very well, right?
Yeah, once again, I mean, EPA has regulation for how much chemicals can be in drinking water. They've got regulations that if there's lead pipes and they're causing a problem, they can make a water system replace it. But there's really very little on the books in terms of that kind of in the middle of the system there with water tanks and towers. There's no federal rule on how often they're inspected, how often they're cleaned. So that's left a lot to the states. And we see a lot of kind of spotty patchwork regulation and oversight at the state level. And frankly, what it often comes down to is your local utility doing a good job or not.
Wow. So if you use public water, are you automatically getting it from one of these towers? Like, does every town in America just about have one?
Yeah, so there's different kinds of storage. I think a lot of people will recognize water towers, of course. They're, you know, so ubiquitous across our landscape. But certain areas, for different reasons, towers not the way to go. So you might see a tank, a low-slung tank closer to the ground, or sometimes they're even kind of built into a hillside and underground, so you might not even see them. But just about every, you know, modern water system is going to have some form of mass storage, often for safety purposes, for pressure, you know, for supply on busy mornings. Everybody's making their coffee and flushing their toilets all at once. So just about every system has one. There's about 72,000 water storage tanks or towers across the country.
Wow. We're speaking with Kyle Bagenstos, investigative reporter at USA Today. He's got a terrific story entitled Dead Snakes and Mice and Toxic Sludge, How Pathogens Go Unnoticed in America's Water Towers. Has there been any kind of move since you started researching this to, I don't know, improve people's confidence maybe following your story?
Yeah, you know, it was interesting. It wasn't because of my story, but it seems like the EPA every once in a while kind of nibbles on this issue and decides what they're going to try and do. There was an effort about 5 or 10 years ago where they were working on a different regulation. We're thinking about maybe working water tanks or towers into it. It didn't come to fruition. And they're currently in the midst of I'm considering it once again as they look at a larger rule about disinfectants in water. But that's going to take some time. I think it looks like they're gonna mull this over for a couple years, maybe come to a decision around 2024, and implementation is as long as 2027. So it'll be interesting to see what, if anything, they do with water towers. Are they going to put in an inspection requirement every couple of years or a cleaning requirement every couple of years? So it's something they're actively working on, but it's a long road.
But nobody, nobody's saying that water coming out of towers these days is generally dirty.
Yeah, I mean it's one of those things that's it's a little tough to tell. A lot of the industry people I spoke with the story, the water utilities, you know, they say generally, you know, things don't seem that bad.
Thanks, Kyle. Kyle Bagenstos, investigative reporter at USA Today. Coming up next for your summer reading list. It's the perfect season for a powerful business upgrade with Dell Technologies' summer sale event. Save up to 45% on secure PCs built for business with Windows 10 Pro. You'll also find great savings on Dell servers, monitors, docks, and other accessories to help boost productivity. Plus, enjoy free shipping on everything. Do more with modern devices and Windows 10 Pro. Call 877-ASK-DELL for a Dell Technologies advisor who can help you find the right tech. That's 877-ASK-DELL for business specials during Dell's summer sale event. With Americans beginning to return to air travel this summer after more than a year away, a new selection of high-anxiety novels set on airplanes awaits them. A couple of the new ones, Hostage by Claire McIntosh, Falling from flight attendant and debut novelist T.J. Newman, and one called The Last Flight by Julie Clark. More from this morning's Jennifer Koshenka.
Just as we step foot back on airplanes, a crop of airplane suspense novels is about to take off. Here with details, Ellen Gammerman of the Wall Street Journal. Ellen, why are these books coming out now, or are we just noticing them now?
Well, that's a good question. I think that there are always going to be thrillers on airplanes. It's a popular subject, and you're trapped up there in this tube, and there's like a little society that forms, and who are going to be what are the passenger personalities going to be, and how is the crew going to be operating behind the scenes? And it's always packed with drama in these novels, but they certainly caught my eye this time because here they are, a few of them coming into airport bookshops and other stores right as we're all starting to think about getting back on planes after many of us have not been traveling. And I thought that, you know, the biggest, highest anxiety might be people coughing and sneezing on a plane, but not about the pandemic, about other forms of high drama.
What are some of the plots?
The plots are pretty scary. They involve hijacking, impossible bargains, plane crashes. One theme that has come up more than once is this terrible decision that someone on the plane is forced to make between saving their family on the ground or crashing the plane.
Do we know what spurred the authors to write books like this?
Well, the authors were writing these books long before the pandemic, and they were interested in these subjects. One, in one case, it's a flight attendant who wrote one of these, who just worked away on red-eye flights, and she said has said that she got the idea for doing it when she went to a pilot on one of her flights and simply asked, what would you do if you had to save your family or crash this airplane? And he went pale. And so she knew she had a story there. And then there's another author who chose an airplane because she just liked the sort of sealed idea, this idea of a sealed world where she could see what happens to a group of people in a tight place put under pressure.
We're speaking with Ellen Gammerman of the Wall Street Journal. You just kind of alluded to it. Did the authors do much research for some of the situations that they wrote about?
They did. They talked with pilots and flight attendants and aviation experts, and they needed to in some cases because they have very detailed scenes of how would you get into a locked cockpit in, you know, a post-9/11 world. How would you land a plane if you were sitting behind the controls and had never flown a plane before? These were things that if you get them wrong, you'll hear from readers. So they went out of their way to do a lot of talking behind the scenes. And, you know, pilots don't want to be quoted on things like this. So it was all very much off the record for them. And then they went, one writer just read message boards where flight attendants talk to each other. She said that the flight crew, the cabin crew, they're very indiscreet when they think they're only talking to each other, which she loved, because she was able to just take out some of their conversations about what they said about passengers, what they said about what they ate and what they did on a flight, and it felt very real to her, and that was the kind of detail she wanted for her book.
Did the authors think travelers will be inclined to read these scary books while on a plane?
It's a good question. One of them said, oh, yeah, no problem. It'll be fine. She thought that it would be the perfect airplane reading because, most people survive. Another one said that she wrote a book with a plane crash in it, and she said she hates plane crash novels. She can't read them. So she kept the actual details of the crash off the page. So you read about it, but it's very brief.
That's Wall Street Journal reporter Ellen Gammerman with this morning's Jennifer Koschenka. 30 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News.
Innovation, resilience, agility. It's how Michigan businesses work together and continue to build the future. Our expertise, talented workforce, and collaborative environment are making a difference now and shaping the future. Join us and make your mark where it matters. Visit michiganbusiness.org/radio to put your plans in motion. That's michiganbusiness.org/radio.
Thanks for being with us, Gordon Deal, with Jennifer Koschenka on this Monday, May 31st, Memorial Day. Thanks for spending time with us. Coming up this half hour, tips for teenagers who are looking for summer work. Also, with masks now coming off more and more, a lot of people are having trouble recognizing each other, and military handlers reunited with their retired canine partners. We'll have that story in about 20 minutes. Well, the U.S. has taken a hands-off approach to regulating self-driving cars, hoping to help the market thrive. But that approach could ultimately backfire if it helps sow doubt about the technology's safety. Currently, regulators are investigating at least 28 crashes of Tesla vehicles.
More from Joanne Muller, transportation correspondent at Axios. Joanne, where are we?
You know, the thing is that technology for self-driving cars is moving rather slowly, but the problem is that a lot of cars have assisted driving features that are enabling people to automate certain functions, you know, keep you in the line, between the lines, and brake in an emergency. These are assisted driving features. The government is not regulating any of this. And so there's a lot of confusion out there, and that's the problem. We hear about self-driving cars all the time, but they don't actually exist yet.
To your point, that's part of the issue here for some regulators, isn't it? That the kind of the misleading names of some features? Because self-driving is not self-driving.
Well, that's exactly it. The probably the worst offender here is Tesla. They have a feature that's basically enhanced cruise control that is called autopilot. And we've heard that before, and it sounds like you just push a button and the car will drive itself. Mm-hmm. But that is not at all true. They've added to that by now introducing a feature called full self-driving. This is still being beta tested with customers, Tesla owners. But again, it is not full self-driving software. And so there's a lot of safety advocates and consumer groups that have come out and really raised the red flag here and said, look, people, we are misleading consumers by using these kinds of marketing names. And it's not only Tesla, but Tesla is the one that is probably the biggest culprit. There's a lot of silly names for this technology. People call it ProPilot or Super Cruise or whatever. But only Tesla is the one that seems to imply that this technology can drive the car for you. The regulators have done nothing about this to this point. And so my story is looking at that issue, really, which is that the technology and the perceptions of the technology are getting way ahead of where regulators are.
We're speaking with Joanne Muller, transportation correspondent at Axios, about her story entitled Self-Driving Cars Speed Forward While Safety Rules Lag. So you referenced the hands-off approach that regulators have taken here. Has there been any indication that they might change that approach?
Well, I think this is a giant question that we have with the new administration. Pete Buttigieg is now the Secretary of Transportation in the Biden administration. He has only said that they are looking at a number of crashes that have occurred in Tesla vehicles where, in many cases, it appears that people were either misusing or over-trusting the technology. In other words, they had perhaps taken their hands off the wheel or were doing other things that were, looking at text or playing video games, for example. So we have to see whether the government will step up here. Clearly, up until this point, the whole idea, the federal government has wanted to let this technology develop on its own. They didn't want to get in the way of innovation, right? And so they tried to give them people, these companies, a free hand within limits. But it's getting to the point now that there's a lot of misunderstanding out there, and it might actually come down to not the safety officials like the NHTSA or the Department of Transportation, and in fact, the Federal Trade Commission, which governs advertising and marketing, might be the ones to crack down on this.
Is there concern among potential buyers that's starting to creep into the conversation?
We're not seeing anything that we can point to. What we do know is that there's a lot of technology that, if you haven't bought a car in the last 5 years, let's say, you're going to be shocked when you buy a new car how much technology is in there and what the car can do for you to help you stay in the lines, brake when needed, keep a distance from someone else ahead of you. Mm-hmm. And that all takes a lot. You have to learn how that works. And some people get frightened by it and are actually turning the technology off because they don't like the idea that there's a third hand, helping them steer the car.
Yeah.
This is a danger too, because then you don't have the benefits of this assisted driving technology. So what we really need is a very big nationwide education effort.
Thanks, Joanne. Joanne Muller, transportation correspondent at Axios. Coming up next, managing customers as mask mandates are lifted. In the sport of business, we're all players. And with the game always changing, you need to be versatile. So does your wardrobe. You want both style and comfort to look as good as you feel inside the office or out. That's what Cuts Clothing is all about. Cuts Clothing keeps you sharp wherever the game takes you, from the boardroom to the bar to the gym. How? They reinvented men's clothing, starting with the t-shirt. Their Pika Tri-Blend fabric is buttery soft, wrinkle-free, and keeps its shape. Everything I've worn from Cuts is next-level comfort. Their polos, hoodies, and crew sweatshirts, all classics, made modern with custom-engineered fabrics you have to wear to believe. So versatile, you'll never need to take them off, and so comfortable, you won't want to. It's not just the lifestyle. It's not just clothing. It's office leisure apparel for the sport of business. Get 15% off your first order by going to cutsclothing.com/Gordon. That's cutsclothing.com/Gordon for 15% off the only shirt worth wearing. Glad you could spend part of your Memorial Day with us. The CDC says masks are no longer required indoors for vaccinated Americans. So how do business owners now handle the delicate dance of identifying who is vaccinated and who is not without alienating customers? We're joined now by Carl Gould, business management expert and founder of Seven Stage Advisors. Carl, what should they know?
Not only are all the tried and true opportunities still available to them, technology has made their opportunities, skyrocket. So it's actually, in many cases, much better than it's ever been.
Boy, I see the help wanted signs, or we're hiring all over the place. I feel mostly in restaurants. Is that where the big opportunities are going to be?
Well, restaurants are hiring again, and if either a restaurant is seasonal and we're coming into season, the spring and summer now, or if the restaurant has not been able to rehire its employees that it lost during the pandemic, then yes. Although I wouldn't be running to the restaurant industry right now unless they're really advertising that they need the help, because they have so much supply and not enough demand right now. I'm not so sure that's the perfect place, but again, if they're advertising a need, absolutely this is a great place to get a job.
What do you recommend for teens then right now?
Okay, so the biggest things right now, Gordon, are personal services, right? So you can't automate, there's no app and there's no drone for cleaning out the basement, cleaning out the attic, cleaning out the garage, helping people with all the things that they need around the house. One of the biggest trends in franchising is bring the franchise to the person. In other words, conduct the services at the home. This is a great opportunity for teens to help with cutting the lawn, going to deliver getting the groceries, doing some chores around the house for people that, especially seniors, that can't necessarily do it for themselves. So tried and true, all the classic, things we did as kids, rake leaves, all that, that's all still there. As a matter of fact, it's even more so because people are appreciating more and more getting that sort of help. So I'd go in that direction. I would start with, if I'm doing some manual labor, I'm going for personal services.
We're speaking with Carl Gould. He is the founder and president of Seven Stage Advisors, a growth advisory firm based in New Jersey. We're talking about tips for teens looking for summer work. Your point about the personal services is interesting, because that's probably more available this year than it was last year during the summer.
Oh, no doubt. Yeah, you could. Now, look, during the pandemic, what people were doing was they were falling in love once again with the home environment. And so now projects around the home are even more prevalent than they had been before. And so, but you're right, now with the economy opening back up and vaccinations and people being more comfortable with the CDC guidelines, yeah, people are getting closer to each other than they ever have been, and they are open to meeting in person. So this should get easier for
This should get easier for the teens. As a matter of fact, one of the up and coming industries now is professional organizing. So just simply organizing, filing, and helping people get their ducks in a row, I should say, is very helpful.
So if you were a teenager looking to do this, if you got those organizational skills, I mean, how do you market yourself?
Well, so I would look at places like Craigslist, Facebook Marketplace. There are a lot of, I live in a lake community. I belong to, we have a little social group called Next Door. And these are all apps where people communicate among themselves. And social media, again, is a great way to do it. So if I'm looking at it, I'm advertising my services on all of my social media sites, through the moms groups in the areas, and saying, hey, I cut lawns. Hey, I'll come and organize. And with parental guidance and parental oversight, let mom and dad get involved and use their network. And I think you'll find a very willing audience.
Do soft skills still matter? The ability to, shake a hand, look someone in the eye, and be good on the telephone. I feel like that's a struggle at times for some of the younger adults.
Yeah, Gordon, candidly, that's what puts it at a premium, because when we were growing up, our generation was taught, look somebody in the eye, shake their hand, firm handshake, be able to explain yourself. And with technology, that's a skill that hasn't been as necessary. So many people have not developed that. So it's even more at a premium now because there's such a... there's such a dearth of it. There's such a scarcity of it right now. So that if you can explain yourself, you can present yourself professionally, all the better.
Thanks, Carl. Carl Gould, founder of Seven Stage Advisors. Coming up next, recognizing colleagues without their masks. As a business owner, you eventually realize you can't do everything yourself, but hiring is complicated. And what if you only need part-time help? Belay, an innovative staffing solution, has successfully matched thousands of businesses with part-time virtual assistants, bookkeepers, and social media strategists. Belay offers you a virtual support team that can transform your workday. Let Belay help you juggle less and accomplish more. Just go to Belay, B-E-L-A-Y, solutions.com/deal. That's BelaySolutions.com/deal.
Thanks for being with us. Early in the pandemic, it took some adjustment to get used to seeing fellow citizens walking around town looking like train robbers, right? Then we grew accustomed to meeting people from the eyes up, or maybe the top of the nose. Now, Americans are increasingly ditching their masks, creating a new conundrum, and that's unfamiliar naked faces. Wall Street Journal reporter Jennifer Levitz has some funny examples of colleagues unable to recognize one another. Jennifer, what have you found?
It's a strange phenomenon because, at the beginning of all this, we suddenly had to get used to just seeing people from the very top of their faces, top of their nose or forehead, and we sort of adjusted to that. Well, now we have a whole new conundrum in that we have to get used to seeing whole faces. And so you have to recognize people that maybe you really haven't seen much in the past months. And then in other cases, maybe you met someone during the pandemic at work and mostly saw them masked, and now you're seeing their face. And so it's just creating some funny situations.
Yeah. And as you point out, what's interesting is that the brain kind of fills in the blanks, right? So if you see somebody with a mask on, your brain, what forms the rest of their face for what's behind the mask in your mind. And sometimes it's very wrong.
Yes, that's right. It was really fascinating. I spoke to Dr. Alice O'Toole, a cognitive scientist at the University of Texas at Dallas, and she said that your brain will fill in what is missing. It's sort of similar to when you're reading a book, a fiction book, and there's a character, and you've just got them placed in your mind of what they look like. And so you do that, and you think, okay, this is what their mouth looks like and their nose. And then so when you see them, finally, she says it does mess up your ability to recognize them because it's different than what your brain has imagined. It's like a different face.
Yeah. Well, it's weird. So what were some of the surprise reactions that you got from people who just couldn't put a name with a face?
Well, it was really interesting. I spoke with a bunch of people. One of them was a professor in Louisiana
who all semester has taught a class of in-person students. Everyone's been masked, or she's staring right at them. But the other day, she's off campus, and she's greeted by an unmasked young woman outside and says, you know, Dr. Hollander, Dr. Hollander. And she just had that moment where I know her, but I can't place her. And I think it doesn't help that masks sort of muffle your voice, so that's a little less clear, too.
Oh, yeah.
And it turns out to be one of her current students that she's seen, you know, every Wednesday for months.
Jeez.
And she was just mortified. She said, you know, I pride myself on, so she emailed the student and let her know. I had a funny situation with somebody who recognized the person but was just very surprised at what she saw. This was a pharmacy owner in Canada who'd hired several people during the pandemic and really hadn't gotten a good look at their faces. She interviewed them in person with masks, and they all work with masks, and they're very careful there. They don't even have lunch together and all that. So the other day she sees one of her pharmacy assistants sort of bringing her mask down, you know, across the room to drink some water, and she actually laughed out loud.
That's funny.
She just told the person, like, oh my gosh, that is not what I thought you looked like. So I actually got to speak with the employee, Jennifer Pridham, and I said, well, so how did that feel to have somebody sort of laugh at your face? She said she thought it was hilarious.
Yeah.
Because she had actually seen her boss's face and had the same feeling.
Thanks, Jennifer. Jennifer Levitz, reporter at The Wall Street Journal. Coming up next, reuniting military handlers with their canine partners. It's the perfect season for a powerful business upgrade with Dell Technologies' summer sale event. Save up to 45% on secure PCs built for business with Windows 10 Pro. You'll also find great savings on Dell servers, monitors, docks, and other accessories to help boost productivity. Plus, enjoy free shipping on everything. Do more with modern devices and Windows 10 Pro. Call 877-ASK-DELL for a Dell Technologies advisor who can help you find the right tech. That's 877-ASK-DELL for business specials during Dell's summer sale event. Do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. Fortunately, GEICO makes it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. It's a good thing, too, because having a home is hard work. Go to GEICO.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. GEICO.com. Easy. We'll finish with this. Military handlers often face the heartbreaking reality of parting ways with their canine counterparts after enduring an incredible bond through service on the battlefield. It usually occurs when a handler gets restationed or if a handler or dog goes into retirement. It's a reality that retired U.S. Army Specialist Mike Stepanovich and U.S. Air Force Staff Sergeant Wade Alfson knew all too well after being separated from their four-legged warriors, Popeye and Xanthi. But Fox News says a nonprofit called American Humane is reuniting the teams. Mr. Stepanovich and Popeye, a 70-year-old German shepherd, served together for 18 months in South Korea. Popeye retired early due to a pinched nerve and separation anxiety. But 10 days ago, Mr. Stepanovich became Popeye's official owner after 4 months apart. And Mr. Alfson was able to get that same feeling of relief earlier this month when he was reunited with Xanthi, a 10-year-old Belgian Malinois. That duo had been separated for over a year. That'll do it for this hour. For Jennifer Koshenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News.